Voldemort, and kissed the hem of his black robes.
"Master, master," he murmured.
The Death Eaters behind him did the same, each of them approaching Voldemort on his knees and kissing his robes, before backing away and standing up, forming a silent circle which enclosed Tom Riddle's grave, Harry, Voldemort, and the sobbing and twitching heap that was Wormtail. Yet they left gaps in the circle, as though waiting for more people. Voldemort, however, did not seem to expect more. He looked around at the hooded faces, and though there was no wind, a rustling seemed to run around the circle, as though it had shivered.
"Welcome, Death Eaters," said Voldemort quietly. 13 years. 13 years since last we met. Yet you answer my call as though it were yesterday. We are still united under the dark mark, then. Or are we?"
He put back his terrible face and sniffed, his slit-like nostrils widening.
"I smell guilt," he said.
"There is a stench of guilt upon the air."
A second shiver ran around the circle, as though each member of it longed but did not dare to step back from him.
"I see you all, whole and healthy, with your powers intact, such prompt appearances. And I ask myself, why did this band of wizards never come to the aid of their master, to whom they swore eternal loyalty?"
No one spoke. No one moved except Wormtail, who was upon the ground, still sobbing over his bleeding arm.
"And I answer myself," whispered Voldemort. "They must have believed me broken. They thought I was gone. They slipped back among my enemies, and they pleaded innocence and ignorance and bewitchment. And then I ask myself, but how could they have believed I would not rise again? They who knew the steps I took long ago to guard myself against mortal death. They who had seen proofs of the immensity of my power in the times when I was mightier than any wizard living. And I answer myself, perhaps they believed a still greater power could exist, one that could vanquish even Lord Voldemort. Perhaps they now pay allegiance to another. Perhaps that champion of commoners, of mudbloods and muggles, Albus Dumbledore."
At the mention of Dumbledore's name, the members of the circle stirred, and some muttered and shook their heads. Voldemort ignored them.
"It is a disappointment to me. I confess myself disappointed."
One of the men suddenly flung himself forward, breaking the circle. Trembling from head to foot, he collapsed at Voldemort's feet.
"Master!"
he shrieked.
"Master! Forgive me! Forgive us all!"
Voldemort began to laugh. He raised his wand.
"Crucio!"
The Death Eater on the ground writhed and shrieked. Harry was sure the sound must carry to the houses around.
"Let the police come,"
he thought desperately.
"Anyone, anything."
Voldemort raised his wand. The tortured Death Eater lay flat upon the ground, gasping.
"Get up, Avery,"
said Voldemort softly.
"Stand up. You ask for forgiveness. I do not forgive. I do not forget. 13 long years. I want 13 years repayment before I forgive you. Wormtail here has paid some of his debt already, have you not, Wormtail?"
He looked down at Wormtail, who continued to sob.
"You return to me, not out of loyalty, but out of fear of your old friends. You deserve this pain, Wormtail. You know that, don't you?"
"Yes, master,"
moaned Wormtail.
"Please, master, please."
"Yet you helped return me to my body,"
said Voldemort coolly, watching Wormtail sob on the ground.
worthless and traitorous as you are, you help me, and Lord Voldemort rewards his helpers."
Voldemort raised his wand again and whirled it through the air. A streak of what looked like molten silver hung shining in the wand's wake. Momentarily shapeless, it writhed and then formed itself into a gleaming replica of a human hand, bright as moonlight, which soared downward and fixed itself upon Wormtail's bleeding wrist. Wormtail's sobbing stopped abruptly, his breathing harsh and ragged. He raised his head and stared in disbelief at the silver hand, now attached seamlessly to his arm, as though he were wearing a dazzling glove. He flexed the shining fingers, then, trembling, picked up a small twig on the ground and crushed it into powder.
"My lord," he whispered, "master, it is beautiful. Thank you, thank you."
He scrambled forward on his knees and kissed the hem of Voldemort's robes.
"May your loyalty never waver again, Wormtail," said Voldemort. "No, my lord, never, my lord."
Wormtail stood up and took his place in the circle, staring at his powerful new hand, his face still shining with tears. Voldemort now approached the man on Wormtail's right.
"Lucius, my slippery friend," he whispered, halting before him. "I am told that you have not renounced the old ways, though to the world you present a respectable face. You are still ready to take the lead in a spot of muggle torture, I believe. Yet you never tried to find me, Lucius. Your exploits at the Quidditch World Cup were fun, I dare say, but might not your energies have been better directed toward finding and aiding your master?" "My lord, I was constantly on the alert," came Lucius Malfoy's voice swiftly from beneath the hood. "Had there been any sign from you, any whisper of your whereabouts, I would have been at your side immediately. Nothing could have prevented me. And yet you ran from my mark when a faithful Death Eater sent it into the sky last summer," said Voldemort lazily. And Mr. Malfoy stopped talking abruptly. "Yes, I know all about that, Lucius. You have disappointed me. I expect more faithful service in the future."
"Of course, my lord, of course. You are merciful. Thank you."
Voldemort moved on and stopped, staring at the space, large enough for two people, that separated Malfoy and the next man.
"The Lestrange should stand here," said Voldemort quietly. "But they are entombed in Azkaban. They were faithful. They went to Azkaban rather than renounce me. When Azkaban is broken open, the Lestrange will be honored beyond their dreams. The Dementors will join us. They are our natural allies. We will recall the banished giants. I shall have all my devoted servants returned to me, and an army of creatures whom all fear."
He walked on. Some of the Death Eaters he passed in silence, but he paused before others and spoke to them.
"MacNair, destroying dangerous beasts for the Ministry of Magic now, Wormtail tells me. You shall have better victims than that soon, MacNair. Lord Voldemort will provide."
"Thank you, master. Thank you,"
murmured MacNair.
"And here,"
Voldemort moved on to the two largest hooded figures,
"we have Crabbe. You will do better this time, will you not, Crabbe? And you, Goyle?"
They bowed clumsily, muttering dully.
"Yes, master. We will, master."
"The same goes for you, Not,"
said Voldemort quietly, as he walked past a stooped figure in Mr. Goyle's shadow.
"My lord, I prostrate myself before you. I am your most faithful."
"That will do,"
said Voldemort. He had reached the largest gap of all, and he stood surveying it with his blank red eyes, as though he could see people standing there.
"And here we have six missing Death Eaters. 3 dead in my service. 1 too cowardly to return. He will pay. 1 who I believe has left me forever. He will be killed, of course. And 1 who remains my most faithful servant and who has already re-entered my service.
The Death Eaters stirred, and Harry saw their eyes dart sideways at one another through their masks.
He is at Hogwarts, that faithful servant, and it was through his efforts that our young friend arrived here tonight. Yes,
said Voldemort, a grin curling his lipless mouth as the eyes of the circle flashed in Harry's direction.
Harry Potter has kindly joined us for my rebirthing party. One might go so far as to call him my guest of honor.
There was a silence. Then the Death Eater to the right of Wormtail stepped forward, and Lucius Malfoy's voice spoke from under the mask.
Master, we crave to know, we beg you to tell us, how you have achieved this miracle, how you managed to return to us.
Ah, what a story it is, Lucius, said Voldemort. And it begins and ends with my young friend here.
He walked lazily over to stand next to Harry, so that the eyes of the whole circle were upon the two of them. The snake continued to circle.
You know, of course, that they have called this boy my downfall?
Voldemort said softly, his red eyes upon Harry, whose scar began to burn so fiercely that he almost screamed in agony.
You all know that on the night I lost my powers and my body, I tried to kill him. His mother died in the attempt to save him, and unwittingly provided him with a protection I admit I had not foreseen. I could not touch the boy.
Voldemort raised one of his long white fingers and put it very close to Harry's cheek.
His mother left upon him the traces of her sacrifice. This is old magic. I should have remembered it. I was foolish to overlook it. But no matter. I can touch him now.
Harry felt the cold tip of the long white finger touch him, and thought his head would burst with the pain. Voldemort laughed softly in his ear, then took the finger away and continued addressing the Death Eaters.
I miscalculated, my friends, I admit it. My curse was deflected by the woman's foolish sacrifice, and it rebounded upon myself. Ah, pain beyond pain, my friends. Nothing could have prepared me for it. I was ripped from my body. I was less than spirit, less than the meanest ghost, but still, I was alive. What I was, even I do not know. I, who have gone further than anybody along the path that leads to immortality. You know my goal, to conquer death. And now I was tested, and it appeared that one or more of my experiments had worked, for I had not been killed, though the curse should have done it. Nevertheless, I was as powerless as the weakest creature alive, and without the means to help myself, for I have no body, and every spell that might have helped me required the use of a wand. I remember only forcing myself, sleeplessly, endlessly, second by second, to exist. I settled in a faraway place, in a forest, and I waited. Surely one of my faithful Death Eaters would try and find me. One of them would come and perform the magic I could not, to restore me to a body. But I waited in vain.
The shiver ran once more around the circle of listening Death Eaters.
Voldemort let the silence spiral horribly before continuing.
Only one power remained to me. I could possess the bodies of others. But I dared not go where other humans were plentiful, for I knew that the Aurors were still abroad and searching for me. I sometimes inhabited animals, snakes, of course, being my preference, but I was little better off inside them than as pure spirit, for their bodies were ill adapted to perform magic, and my possession of them shortened their lives. None of them lasted long. Then, 4 years ago, the means for my return seemed assured. A wizard, young, foolish, and gullible, wandered across my path in the forest I had made my home. Oh, he seemed the very chance I had been dreaming of, for he was a teacher at Dumbledore's school. He was easy to bend to my will. He brought me back to this country, and after a while, I took possession of his body to supervise him closely as he carried out my orders. But my plan failed. I did not manage to seal the Sorcerer's Stone. I was not to be assured immortal life. I was thwarted, thwarted once again by Harry Potter.
Silence once more. Nothing was stirring, not even the leaves on the yew tree. The Death Eaters were quite motionless, the glittering eyes in their masks fixed upon Voldemort and upon Harry.
The servant died when I left his body, and I was left as weak as ever I had been,
Voldemort continued.
I returned to my hiding place far away, and I will not pretend to you that I didn't then fear that I might never regain my powers. Yes, that was perhaps my darkest hour. I could not hope that I would be sent another wizard to possess, and I had given up hope now that any of my Death Eaters cared what had become of me.
One or two of the masked wizards in the circle moved uncomfortably, but Voldemort took no notice.
And then, not even a year ago, when I had almost abandoned hope, it happened at last. A servant returned to me. Wormtail, here, who had faked his own death to escape justice, was driven out of hiding by those he had once counted friends, and decided to return to his master. He sought me in the country where it had long been rumored I was hiding, helped, of course, by the rats he met along the way. Wormtail has a curious affinity with rats, do you not, Wormtail? His filthy little friends told him there was a place, deep in an Albanian forest, that they avoided, where small animals like themselves had met their deaths by a dark shadow that possessed them. But his journey back to me was not smooth, was it, Wormtail? For, hungry one night on the edge of the very forest where he had hoped to find me, he foolishly stopped at an inn for some food, and who should he meet there but one Bertha Jorkins, a witch from the Ministry of Magic. Now see the way that fate favors Lord Voldemort. This might have been the end of Wormtail and of my last hope for regeneration, but Wormtail, displaying a presence of mind I would never have expected from him, convinced Bertha Jorkins to accompany him on a nighttime stroll. He overpowered her. He brought her to me. And Bertha Jorkins, who might have ruined all, proved instead to be a gift beyond my wildest dreams, for, with a little persuasion, she became a veritable mine of information. She told me that the Triwizard Tournament would be played at Hogwarts this year. She told me that she knew of a faithful Death Eater who would be only too willing to help me, if I could only contact him. She told me many things, but the means I used to break the memory charm upon her were powerful. And when I had extracted all useful information from her, her mind and body were both damaged beyond repair. She had now served her purpose. I could not possess her. I disposed of her.
Voldemort smiled his terrible smile, his red eyes blank and pitiless.
Wormtail's body, of course, was ill-adapted for possession, as all assumed him dead, and would attract far too much attention if noticed. However, he was the able-bodied servant I needed, and poor wizard though he is, Wormtail was able to follow the instructions I gave him, which would return me to a rudimentary, weak body of my own. A body I would be able to inhabit while awaiting the essential ingredients for true rebirth. A spell or two of my own invention. A little help from my dear Nagini.
Voldemort's red eyes fell upon the continually circling snake.
A potion concocted from unicorn blood and the snake venom Nagini provided. I was soon returned to an almost human form, and strong enough to travel. There was no hope of stealing the Sorcerer's Stone any more, for I knew that Dumbledore would have seen to it that it was destroyed. But I was willing to embrace mortal life again before chasing immortality. I set my sights lower. I would settle for my old body back again, and my old strength. I knew that to achieve this, it is an old piece of dark magic, the potion that revived me tonight. I would need 3 powerful ingredients. Well, one of them was already at hand, was it not, Wormtail? Flesh given by a servant. My father's bone naturally meant that we would have to come here where he was buried. But the blood of a foe? Wormtail would have had me use any wizard, would you not, Wormtail? Any wizard who had hated me, as so many of them still do. But I knew the one I must use if I was to rise again more powerful than I had been when I had fallen. I wanted Harry Potter's blood. I wanted the blood of the one who had stripped me of power 13 years ago, for the lingering protection his mother once gave him would then reside in my veins too. But how to get at Harry Potter? For he has been better protected than I think even he knows, protected in ways devised by Dumbledore long ago, when it fell to him to arrange the boy's future. Dumbledore invoked an ancient magic to ensure the boy's protection, as long as he is in his relation's care. Not even I can touch him there. Then, of course, there was the Quidditch World Cup. I thought his protection might be weaker there, away from his relations and Dumbledore, but I was not yet strong enough to attempt kidnap in the midst of a horde of Ministry wizards. And then the boy would return to Hogwarts, where he is under the crooked nose of that muggle-loving fool from morning until night. So how could I take him? Why, by using Bertha Jorkins's information, of course. Use my one faithful Death Eater stationed at Hogwarts to ensure that the boy's name was entered into the Goblet of Fire. Use my Death Eater to ensure that the boy won the tournament, that he touched the Triwizard Cup first, the cup which my Death Eater had turned into a portkey, which would bring him here beyond the reach of Dumbledore's help and protection, and into my waiting arms. And here he is, the boy you all believed had been my downfall.
Voldemort moved slowly forward and turned to face Harry. He raised his wand.
Crucio!
It was pain beyond anything Harry had ever experienced. His very bones were on fire. His head was surely splitting along his scar. His eyes were rolling madly in his head. He wanted it to end, to black out, to die. And then it was gone. He was hanging limply in the ropes, binding him to the headstone of Voldemort's father, looking up into those bright red eyes through a kind of mist. The night was ringing with the sound of the Death Eater's laughter.
"You see? I think how foolish it was to suppose that this boy could ever have been stronger than me," said Voldemort. "But I want there to be no mistake in anybody's mind. Harry Potter escaped me by a lucky chance, and I am now going to prove my power by killing him here and now in front of you all, where there is no Dumbledore to help him and no mother to die for him. I will give him his chance. He will be allowed to fight, and you will be left in no doubt which of us is the stronger. Just a little longer, Nagini,"
he whispered, and the snake glided away through the grass to where the Death Eaters stood watching.
"Now, untie him, Wormtail, and give him back his wand."
Chapter 34 Priory Incantatum. Wormtail approached Harry, who scrambled to find his feet, to support his own weight before the ropes were untied. Wormtail raised his new silver hand, pulled out the wad of material gagging Harry, and then, with one swipe, cut through the bonds tying Harry to the gravestone. There was a split second, perhaps, when Harry might have considered running for it, but his injured leg shook under him as he stood on the overgrown grave, as the Death Eaters closed ranks, forming a tighter circle around him and Voldemort, so that the gaps where the missing Death Eaters should have stood were filled. Wormtail walked out of the circle to the place where Cedric's body lay, and returned with Harry's wand, which he thrust roughly into Harry's hand without looking at him. Then Wormtail resumed his place in the circle of watching Death Eaters.
"You have been taught how to duel, Harry Potter," said Voldemort softly, his red eyes glinting through the darkness.
At these words Harry remembered, as though from a former life, the dueling club at Hogwarts he had attended briefly 2 years ago. All he had learned there was the disarming spell, Expelliarmus. And what use would it be to deprive Voldemort of his wand, even if he could, when he was surrounded by Death Eaters, outnumbered by at least 30-1? He had never learned anything that could possibly fit him for this. He knew he was facing the thing against which Moody had always warned, the unblockable Avada Kedavra curse. And Voldemort was right. His mother was not here to die for him this time. He was quite unprotected.
"We bow to each other, Harry," said Voldemort, bending a little but keeping his snake-like face upturned to Harry. "Come, the niceties must be observed. Dumbledore would like you to show manners. Bow to death, Harry."
The Death Eaters were laughing again. Voldemort's lipless mouth was smiling. Harry did not bow. He was not going to let Voldemort play with him before killing him. He was not going to give him that satisfaction.
"I said bow,"
Voldemort said, raising his wand, and Harry felt his spine curve as though a huge invisible hand were bending him ruthlessly forward, and the Death Eaters laughed harder than ever.
"Very good," said Voldemort softly,
and as he raised his wand the pressure bearing down upon Harry lifted too.
"And now you face me like a man, straight-backed and proud, the way your father died. And now we duel!"
Voldemort raised his wand, and before Harry could do anything to defend himself, before he could even move, he had been hit again by the Cruciatus curse. The pain was so intense, so all-consuming, that he no longer knew where he was. White-hot knives were piercing every inch of his skin. His head was surely going to burst with pain. He was screaming more loudly than he'd ever screamed in his life. And then it stopped. Harry rolled over and scrambled to his feet. He was shaking as uncontrollably as Wormtail had done when his hand had been cut off. He staggered sideways into the wall of watching Death Eaters, and they pushed him away, back toward Voldemort.
a little break,"
said Voldemort, the slit-like nostrils dilating with excitement.
"A little pause. That hurt, didn't it, Harry? You don't want me to do that again, do you?"
Harry didn't answer. He was going to die like Cedric. Those pitiless red eyes were telling him so. He was going to die, and there was nothing he could do about it. But he wasn't going to play along. He wasn't going to obey Voldemort. He wasn't going to beg.
"I asked you whether you wanted me to do that again,"
said Voldemort softly.
"Answer me. Imperio!"
And Harry felt, for the third time in his life, the sensation that his mind had been wiped of all thought.
Ah, it was bliss, not to think. It was as though he were floating, dreaming. "Just answer no. Say no. Just answer no."
"I will not," said a stronger voice in the back of his head. "I won't answer.
Just answer no. I won't do it. I won't say it. Just answer no.
I won't!" And these words burst from Harry's mouth. They echoed through the graveyard, and the dream state was lifted as suddenly as though cold water had been thrown over him. Back rushed the aches that the Cruciatus curse had left all over his body. Back rushed the realization of where he was and what he was facing.
"You won't?"
said Voldemort quietly, and the Death Eaters were not laughing now.
"You won't say no? Harry, obedience is a virtue I need to teach you before you die. Perhaps another little dose of pain."
Voldemort raised his wand, but this time Harry was ready. With the reflexes born of his Quidditch training, he flung himself sideways onto the ground. He rolled behind the marble headstone of Voldemort's father, and he heard it crack as the curse missed him.
"We are not playing hide-and-seek, Harry,"
said Voldemort's soft, cold voice, drawing nearer as the Death Eaters laughed.
"You cannot hide from me. Does this mean you are tired of our duel? Does this mean that you would prefer me to finish it now, Harry? Come out, Harry. Come out and play. Then it will be quick. It might even be painless. I would not know. I have never died."
Harry crouched behind the headstone and knew the end had come. There was no hope, no help to be had. And as he heard Voldemort draw nearer still, he knew one thing only, and it was beyond fear or reason. He was not going to die crouching here like a child playing hide-and-seek. He was not going to die kneeling at Voldemort's feet. He was going to die upright like his father, and he was going to die trying to defend himself, even if no defense was possible. Before Voldemort could stick his snake-like face around the headstone, Harry stood up. He gripped his wand tightly in his hand, thrust it out in front of him, and threw himself around the headstone facing Voldemort. Voldemort was ready. As Harry shouted, "Expelliarmus!" Voldemort cried, "Avada Kedavra!" A jet of green light issued from Voldemort's wand, just as a jet of red light blasted from Harry's. They met in midair, and suddenly Harry's wand was vibrating as though an electric charge was surging through it. His hand seized up around it. He couldn't have released it if he'd wanted to. And a narrow beam of light connected the two wands, neither red nor green, but bright, deep gold. Harry, following the beam with his astonished gaze, saw that Voldemort's long white fingers, too, were gripping a wand that was shaking and vibrating. And then nothing could have prepared Harry for this. He felt his feet lift from the ground. He and Voldemort were both being raised into the air, their wands still connected by that thread of shimmering golden light. They glided away from the tombstone of Voldemort's father, and then came to rest on a patch of ground that was clear and free of graves. The Death Eaters were shouting. They were asking Voldemort for instructions. They were closing in, reforming the circle around Harry and Voldemort, the snakes slithering at their heels, some of them drawing their wands. The golden thread connecting Harry and Voldemort splintered. though the ones remained connected, a thousand more beams arced high over Harry and Voldemort, criss-crossing all around them, until they were enclosed in a golden, dome-shaped web. A cage of light, beyond which the Death Eaters circled like jackals, their cries strangely muffled now.
"Do nothing!"
Voldemort shrieked to the Death Eaters, and Harry saw his red eyes wide with astonishment at what was happening, saw him fighting to break the thread of light still connecting his wand with Harry's. Harry held onto his wand more tightly with both hands, and the golden thread remained unbroken.
"Do nothing unless I command you!"
Voldemort shouted to the Death Eaters, and then an unearthly and beautiful sound filled the air. It was coming from every thread of the light-spun web vibrating around Harry and Voldemort. It was a sound Harry recognized, though he had heard it only once before in his life. Phoenix song. It was the sound of hope to Harry, the most beautiful and welcome thing he had ever heard in his life. He felt as though the song were inside him instead of just around him. It was the sound he connected with Dumbledore, and it was almost as though a friend was speaking in his ear. "Don't break the connection." "I know," Harry told the music. "I know, I mustn't." But no sooner had he thought it, then the thing became much harder to do. His wand began to vibrate more powerfully than ever, and now the beam between him and Voldemort changed too. It was as though large beads of light were sliding up and down the thread connecting the wands. Harry felt his wand give a shudder under his hand as the light beads began to slide slowly and steadily his way. The direction of the beam's movement was now toward him, from Voldemort, and he felt his wand shudder angrily. As the closest bead of light moved nearer to Harry's wand tip, the wood beneath his fingers grew so hot he feared it would burst into flame. The closer that bead moved, the harder Harry's wand vibrated. He was sure his wand would not survive contact with it. It felt as though it was about to shatter under his fingers. He concentrated every last particle of his mind upon forcing the bead back toward Voldemort, his ears full of Phoenix song, his eyes furious, fixed, and slowly, very slowly, the beads quivered to a halt, and then, just as slowly, they began to move the other way, and it was Voldemort's wand that was vibrating extra hard now, Voldemort, who looked astonished and almost fearful. One of the beads of light was quivering inches from the tip of Voldemort's wand. Harry didn't understand why he was doing it, didn't know what it might achieve, but he now concentrated as he had never done in his life on forcing that bead of light right back into Voldemort's wand. And slowly, very slowly, it moved along the golden thread. It trembled for a moment, and then it connected. At once Voldemort's wand began to emit echoing screams of pain. Then Voldemort's red eyes widened with shock. A dense, smoky hand flew out of the tip of it and vanished. The ghost of the hand he had made Wormtail. More shouts of pain, and then something much larger began to blossom from Voldemort's wand tip. A great, greyish something that looked as though it were made of the solidest, densest smoke. It was a head. Now a chest and arms, the torso of Cedric Diggory. If ever Harry might have released his wand from shock, it would have been then, but instinct kept him clutching his wand tightly so that the thread of golden light remained unbroken, even though the thick grey ghost of Cedric Diggory... Was it a ghost? It looked so solid, emerged in its entirety from the end of Voldemort's wand, as though it was squeezing itself out of a very narrow tunnel. And this shade of Cedric stood up, and looked up and down the golden thread of light, and spoke.
"Hold on, Harry," it said.
Its voice was distant and echoing. Harry looked at Voldemort. His wide red eyes were still shocked. He had no more expected this than Harry had. And, very dimly, Harry heard the frightened yells of the Death Eaters prowling around the edges of the golden dome. More screams of pain from the wand, and then something else emerged from its tip. The dense shadow of a second head, quickly followed by arms and torso.
An old man Harry had seen only in a dream was now pushing himself out of the end of the wand, just as Cedric had done. And his ghost, or his shadow, or whatever it was, fell next to Cedric's, and surveyed Harry and Voldemort, and the golden web, and the connected wands, with mild surprise, leaning on his walking stick.
"He was a real wizard, then,"
the old man said, his eyes on Voldemort.
"Killed me, that one did. You fight him, boy."
But already yet another head was emerging, and this head, grey as a smoky statue, was a woman's. Harry, both arms shaking now as he fought to keep his wand still, saw her drop to the ground and straighten up like the others, staring. The shadow of Bertha Jorkins surveyed the battle before her with wide eyes.
"Don't let go now,"
she cried, and her voice echoed like Cedric's as though from very far away.
"Don't let him get you, Harry. Don't let go."
She and the other two shadowy figures began to pace around the inner walls of the golden web, while the Death Eaters flitted around the outside of it, and Voldemort's dead victims whispered as they circled the duelers, whispered words of encouragement to Harry, and hissed words Harry couldn't hear to Voldemort. And now another head was emerging from the tip of Voldemort's wand, and Harry knew when he saw it who it would be. He knew as though he had expected it from the moment when Cedric had appeared from the wand. Knew because the woman was the one he'd thought of more than any other tonight. The smoky shadow of a young woman with long hair fell to the ground as Bertha had done, straightened up, and looked at him. And Harry, his arms shaking madly now, looked back into the ghostly face of his mother.
"Your father's coming," she said quietly. "Hold on for your father. It will be all right. Hold on."
And he came, first his head, then his body. Tall and untidy-haired like Harry, the smoky, shadowy form of James Potter blossomed from the end of Voldemort's wand, fell to the ground, and straightened like his wife. He walked close to Harry, looking down at him, and he spoke in the same distant, echoing voice as the others, but quietly, so that Voldemort, his face now livid with fear as his victims prowled around him, could not hear.
"When the connection is broken, we will linger for only moments, but we will give you time. You must get to the portkey. It will return you to Hogwarts. Do you understand, Harry?"
"Yes,"
Harry gasped, fighting now to keep a hold on his wand, which was slipping and sliding beneath his fingers.
"Harry,"
whispered the figure of Cedric,
"take my body back, will you? Take my body back to my parents."
"I will,"
said Harry, his face screwed up with the effort of holding the wand.
"Do it now,"
whispered his father's voice.
"Be ready to run. Do it now."
"Now!"
Harry yelled. He didn't think he could have held on for another moment anyway. He pulled his wand upward with an almighty wrench, and the golden thread broke, the cage of light vanished, the phoenix song died. But the shadowy figures of Voldemort's victims did not disappear. They were closing in upon Voldemort, shielding Harry from his gaze. And Harry ran as he had never run in his life, knocking two stunned Death Eaters aside as he passed. He zigzagged behind headstones, feeling their curses following him, hearing them hit the headstones. He was dodging curses and graves, pelting towards Cedric's body, no longer aware of the pain in his leg, his whole being concentrated on what he had to do.
"Stun him!"
he heard Voldemort scream. 10 feet from Cedric, Harry dived behind a marble angel to avoid the jets of red light, and saw the tip of its wing shatter as the spells hit it. Gripping his wand more tightly, he dashed out from behind the angel.
"Impedimenta!"
he bellowed, pointing his wand wildly over his shoulder at the Death Eaters running at him. From a muffled yell, he thought he had stopped at least one of them, but there was no time to stop and look. He jumped over the cup and dived as he heard more wand blasts behind him. More jets of light flew over his head as he fell, stretching out his hand to grab Cedric's arm.
"Stand aside! I will kill him! He is mine!"
shrieked Voldemort. Harry's hand had closed on Cedric's wrist. One tombstone stood between him and Voldemort, but Cedric was too heavy to carry, and the cup was out of reach. Voldemort's red eyes flamed in the darkness. Harry saw his mouth curl into a smile, saw him raise his wand.
"Accio!"
Harry yelled, pointing his wand at the Triwizard Cup. It flew into the air and soared toward him. Harry caught it by the handle. He heard Voldemort scream of fury at the same moment that he felt the jerk behind his navel that meant the portkey had worked. It was speeding him away in a whirl of wind and colour, and Cedric along with him. They were going back. Chapter 35 Veritaserum. Harry felt himself slam flat into the ground. His face was pressed into grass. The smell of it filled his nostrils. He had closed his eyes while the portkey transported him, and he kept them closed now. He did not move. All the breath seemed to have been knocked out of him. His head was swimming so badly he felt as though the ground beneath him was swaying like the deck of a ship. To hold himself steady, he tightened his hold on the two things he was still clutching, the smooth, cold handle of the Triwizard Cup, and Cedric's body. He felt as though he would slide away into the blackness gathering at the edges of his brain if he let go of either of them. Shock and exhaustion kept him on the ground, breathing in the smell of the grass, waiting, waiting for someone to do something, something to happen, and all the while his scar burned dully on his forehead. A torrent of sound deafened and confused him. There were voices everywhere, footsteps, screams. He remained where he was, his face screwed up against the noise, as though it were a nightmare that would pass. Then a pair of hands seized him roughly and turned him over.
"Harry! Harry!"
He opened his eyes. He was looking up at the starry sky, and Albus Dumbledore was crouched over him. The dark shadows of a crowd of people pressed in around them, pushing nearer. Harry felt the ground beneath his head reverberating with their footsteps. He had come back to the edge of the maze. He could see the stands rising above him, the shapes of people moving in them, the stars above. Harry let go of the cup, but he clutched Cedric to him even more tightly. He raised his free hand and seized Dumbledore's wrist, while Dumbledore's face swam in and out of focus.
"He's back," Harry whispered. "He's back. Voldemort."
"What's going on? What's happened?"
The face of Cornelius Fudge appeared upside down over Harry. It looked white, appalled.
"My God, Diggory,"
it whispered.
"Dumbledore, he's dead."
The words were repeated. The shadowy figures pressing in on them gasped it to those around them. And then others shouted it, screeched it into the night.
"He's dead! He's dead! Cedric Diggory, dead!"
"Harry, let go of him,"
he heard Fudge's voice say, and he felt fingers trying to pry him from Cedric's limp body, but Harry wouldn't let him go. Then Dumbledore's face, which was still blurred and misted, came closer.
"Harry, you can't help him now. It's over. Let go."
"He wanted me to bring him back,"
Harry muttered. It seemed important to explain this.
"He wanted me to bring him back to his parents."
"That's right, Harry. Just let go now."
Dumbledore bent down, and with extraordinary strength for a man so old and thin, raised Harry from the ground and set him on his feet. Harry swayed. His head was pounding. His injured leg would no longer support his weight. The crowd around them jostled, fighting to get closer, pressing darkly in on him.
"What's happened? What's wrong with them?
Diggory's dead?"
"He'll need to go to the hospital wing,"
Fudge was saying loudly.
"He's ill. He's injured. Dumbledore, Diggory's parents, they're here. They're in the stands. I'll take Harry."
"Dumbledore, I'll take him."
"No, I would prefer—"
"Dumbledore, Amos Diggory's running. He's coming over. Don't you think you should tell him before he sees—"
"Harry, stay here."
Girls were screaming, sobbing hysterically. The scene flickered oddly before Harry's eyes.
"It's all right, son, I've got you. Come on, hospital wing."
"Dumbledore said stay,"
said Harry thickly, the pounding in his scar making him feel as though he was about to throw up. His vision was blurring worse than ever.
"You need to lie down. Come on now."
Someone larger and stronger than he was half pulling, half carrying him through the frightened crowd. Harry heard people gasping, screaming, and shouting as the man supporting him pushed a path through them, taking him back to the castle. Across the lawn, past the lake and the Durmstrang ship, Harry heard nothing but the heavy breathing of the man helping him walk.
"What happened, Harry?"
the man asked at last as he lifted Harry up the stone steps. Clunk, clunk, clunk. It was Mad-Eye Moody.
"Cup was a portkey," said Harry, as they crossed the entrance hall. "Took me and Cedric to a graveyard, and Voldemort was there, Lord Voldemort."
Clunk, 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 up the marble stairs.
"The Dark Lord was there? What happened then?"
"Killed Cedric. They killed Cedric."
"And then?"
Clunk, 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 along the corridor.
"Made a potion. Got his body back."
"The Dark Lord got his body back. He's returned.
And the Death Eaters came. And then we dueled."
"You dueled with the Dark Lord?"
"Got away. My wand did something funny. I saw my mum and dad. They came out of his wand."
"In here, Harry. In here. And sit down. You'll be all right now. Drink this."
Harry heard a key scrape in a lock and felt a cup being pushed into his hands.
"Drink it. You'll feel better. Come on, now, Harry. I need to know exactly what happened."
Moody helped tip the stuff down Harry's throat. He coughed, a peppery taste burning his throat. Moody's office came into sharper focus, and so did Moody himself. He looked as white as Fudge had looked, and both eyes were fixed unblinkingly upon Harry's face.
"Voldemort's back, Harry. You're sure he's back? How did he do it?"
"He took stuff from his father's grave, and from Wormtail, and me," said Harry. His head felt clearer. His scar wasn't hurting so badly. He could now see Moody's face distinctly, even though the office was dark. He could still hear screaming and shouting from the distant Quidditch field.
"What did the Dark Lord take from you?"
said Moody.
"Blood," said Harry, raising his arm. His sleeve was ripped where Wormtail's dagger had torn it.
Moody let out his breath in a long, low hiss.
"And the Death Eaters? They returned?"
"Yes," said Harry.
"Loads of them." "How did he treat them?"
Moody asked quietly.
"Did he forgive them?"
But Harry had suddenly remembered. He should have told Dumbledore. He should have said it straight away.
"There's a Death Eater at Hogwarts. There's a Death Eater here. They put my name in the Goblet of Fire. They made sure I got through to the end."
Harry tried to get up, but Moody pushed him back down.
"I know who the Death Eater is," he said quietly.
"Karkaroff," said Harry wildly. "Where is he? Have you got him? Is he locked up?"
"Karkaroff," said Moody with an odd laugh. "Karkaroff fled tonight when he felt the dark mark burn upon his arm. He betrayed too many faithful supporters of the Dark Lord to wish to meet them, but I doubt he will get far. The Dark Lord has ways of tracking his enemies."
"Karkaroff's gone. He ran away. But then he didn't put my name in the goblet?"
"No,"
said Moody slowly.
"No, he didn't. It was I who did that."
Harry heard, but didn't believe.
"No, you didn't," he said. "You didn't do that. You can't have done—" "I assure you I did,"
said Moody, and his magical eyes swung around and fixed upon the door, and Harry knew he was making sure that there was no one outside it. At the same time, Moody drew out his wand and pointed it at Harry.
"He forgave them, then?" he said. "The Death Eaters who went free? The ones who escaped Azkaban?"
"What?" said Harry.
He was looking at the wand Moody was pointing at him. This was a bad joke. It had to be.
"I asked you," said Moody quietly, "whether he forgave the scum who never even went to look for him. Those treacherous cowards who wouldn't even brave Azkaban for him. The faithless, worthless bits of filth who were brave enough to cavort in masks at the Quidditch World Cup, but fled at the sight of the dark mark when I fired it into the sky."
"You fired? What are you talking about?"
"I told you, Harry, I told you. If there's one thing I hate more than any other, It's a Death Eater who walked free. They turned their backs on my master when he needed them most. I expected him to punish them. I expected him to torture them. Tell me he hurt them, Harry.
Moody's face was suddenly lit with an insane smile.
Tell me he told them that I alone remain faithful, prepared to risk everything to deliver to him the one thing he wanted above all, you.
You didn't. It can't be you.
Who put your name in the Goblet of Fire under the name of a different school? I did. Who frightened off every person I thought might try to hurt you or prevent you from winning the tournament? I did. Who nudged Hagrid into showing you the dragons? I did. Who helped you see the only way you could beat the dragon? I did.
Moody's magical eye had now left the door. It was fixed upon Harry. His lopsided mouth leered more widely than ever.
It hasn't been easy, Harry, guiding you through these tasks without arousing suspicion. I've had to use every ounce of cunning I possess so that my hand would not be detectable in your success. Dumbledore would have been very suspicious if you had managed everything too easily. As long as you got into that maze, preferably with a decent head start, then I knew I would have a chance of getting rid of the other champions and leaving your way clear. But I also had to contend with your stupidity. The second task. That was when I was most afraid we would fail. I was keeping watch on you, Potter. I knew you hadn't worked out the egg's clue, so I had to give you another hint.
You didn't! Harry said hoarsely.
Cedric gave me the clue. Who told Cedric to open it underwater? I did. I trusted that he would pass the information on to you. Decent people are so easy to manipulate, Potter. I was sure Cedric would want to repay you for telling him about the dragons, and so he did. But even then, Potter, even then you seemed likely to fail. I was watching all the time, all those hours in the library. Didn't you realize that the book you needed was in your dormitory all along? I planted it there early on. I gave it to the Longbottom boy, don't you remember? Magical water plants of the Mediterranean. It would have told you all you needed to know about gillyweed. I expected you to ask everyone and anyone you could for help. Longbottom would have told you in an instant, but you did not. You did not. You have a streak of pride and independence that might have ruined all. So what could I do? Feed you information from another innocent source? You told me at the Yule Ball a house elf called Dobby had given you a Christmas present. I called the elf to the staff room to collect some robes for cleaning. I staged a loud conversation with Professor McGonagall about the hostages who had been taken and whether Potter would think to use gillyweed. And your little elf friend ran straight to Snape's office and then hurried to find you.
Moody's wand was still pointing directly at Harry's heart. Over his shoulder, foggy shapes were moving in the faux glass on the wall.
You were so long in that lake, Potter. I thought you had drowned. But luckily, Dumbledore took your idiocy for nobility and marked you high for it. I breathed again. You had an easier time of it than you should have in that maze tonight, of course, said Moody. I was patrolling around it, able to see through the outer hedges, able to curse many obstacles out of your way. I stunned Fleur Delacour as she passed. I put the imperious curse on Crumb so that he would finish Diggory and leave your path to the cup clear.
Harry stared at Moody. He just didn't see how this could be. Dumbledore's friend, the famous Auror, the one who had caught so many Death Eaters, it made no sense, no sense at all. The foggy shapes in the faux glass were sharpening, had become more distinct. Harry could see the outlines of three people over Moody's shoulder moving closer and closer, but Moody wasn't watching them. His magical eye was upon Harry.
The Dark Lord didn't manage to kill you, Potter. And he so wanted to,
whispered Moody.
Imagine how he will reward me when he finds I have done it for him. I gave you to him, the thing he needed above all to regenerate, and then I killed you for him. I will be honored beyond all other Death Eaters. I will be his dearest, his closest supporter, closer than a son.
Moody's normal eye was bulging, the magical eye fixed upon Harry. The door was barred, and Harry knew he